This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents The Billionaire's Angel, Scandals of the Bad Boy Billionaires novel. Written by Ivy Lane. Performed by C.J. Bloom and Beckett Greylock. Chapter 1. Sophie. My hands shook as I measured a short length of tape. Staring down at the black cockroach in my hand, I wondered again how I'd gotten myself into this mess. It's not what you're thinking. The cockroach wasn't real. I've learned how to be brave in the past few years, but not brave enough to carry around live bugs. Yuck. No. This cockroach had been carefully cut out of black construction paper, along with the selection of spiders and crickets spread across the seat of the leather couch. It was after 2 in the morning, and I was in my employer's library, fumbling in the dark to tape the fake bugs to the inside of the white silk lampshades. The next person to flip on the lights would be treated to the illusion that huge bugs lurked inside the lamps. I could already imagine the screams that would echo through the house. It wouldn't be the first time. I really had to find a way to keep my charge off the internet. Boredom plus an active mind equals trouble. At least it does when your name is Amelia Winters. Since Amelia was 78 and her hands weren't as nimble as mine, I got roped into carrying out the pranks she dreamed up. I was supposed to be her nurse, and I was when she needed one. High blood pressure and type 2 diabetes meant she needed some supervision, but not enough to require live-in care. Since most of the family had moved out of the enormous house, and Amelia's great-nephew Aiden traveled often for work, I was there to keep her both healthy and entertained. It could have been a lonely job, if not for Amelia. Her pranks aside, she was a blast to work for. Funny and loyal and sweet. Her body was slowing down, but her mind was sharp. And she had a wicked sense of humor. Sometimes too wicked. The pranks, case in point. At least once a week she came up with a new one, sending me out for materials and instructing me on the details of her plans. At first I'd worried she was going to get me fired. Since my husband had died, I'd been bouncing from job to job. I'd been more than ready to settle down when I'd been hired here, and I hadn't wanted to be kicked out for lining the hallway with tiny cups filled with water. Amelia might be almost 80, but her sense of humor was a lot more frat boy than elderly matron. Fortunately for me, the family was well-versed in Amelia's ways. Aiden, who'd scared the heck out of me when he'd hired me, adored his great-aunt. She could probably set the house on fire, and he'd laugh and kiss her on the cheek. The rest of them were the same, affectionate and amused by Amelia's antics. The only two exceptions were the housekeeper, Mrs. Williamson, and Aiden's cousin, Gage. Mrs. Williamson and Amelia were chalk and cheese. Mrs. W. was far too proper to admit she didn't love every member of the Winters family. But we all knew Amelia drove her nuts. Amelia, for her part, delighted in pestering Mrs. W. More than once I'd heard her mutter under her breath that Mrs. W. had a stick up her you-know-where. She'd never say it, but I'm pretty sure Mrs. W. thought Amelia should give in and act her age. I'd only been with the family for 6 months, but I could have told her that was a lost cause. By all accounts, Amelia Winters had never acted her age, and at 78 she wasn't about to start. I adored Amelia, and I had to admit, some of her pranks were funny. But I liked Mrs. W. too much to let her think her beloved Winters house was infested with 6-inch cockroaches. As soon as I'd taped the last fake insect in place, I pulled out my phone to shoot Mrs. W. a warning text. Sometime tomorrow she'd come into the library on a made-up pretext and let out a very convincing scream. Amelia would get her laugh, and Mrs. W. wouldn't have to kill her. Everyone would be happy. I tap send on my text and went to shove the phone in the pocket of my robe when two arms closed around my chest like steel bars, pinning my hands to my sides. My phone tumbled from nerveless fingers, bouncing off my bare toes and skidding across the carpet. I froze where I was, my heart thumping in my chest so hard. I heard the whoosh of blood in my ears. Panic shot ice down my spine. My nerves screamed, "Danger! Danger!" Head spinning with fear, I tried to think. The long, hard body pressed to my back made that impossible. Eyes squeezed shut. Memories flashed against my closed lids. A newsreel of everything I wanted to forget. Hard hands grabbing me in the dark, dragging me from my bed. Pain. "It isn't Anthony," I told myself. "Anthony is dead." Summoning every ounce of courage I had, I said, "Let me go." A low, husky voice rumbled in my ear.
"Not until you tell me what the hell you're doing in here in the middle of the night."
A hitch in my voice, I said, "Amelia. Amelia sent me." The words tangled in my throat. I couldn't say more. The heat of a male body so close to mine, the strength of his arms trapping me, his warm breath against my cheek. It was too much. I hadn't been this close to a man, any man, since my husband had died. After Anthony, I'd never wanted to be this close to a man again. In a rush of awareness, I knew this wasn't Aiden. Aiden had always been careful to preserve a polite, formal distance between us. If he caught me skulking around the house in the middle of the night, he'd never grab me from behind. Heck, with the way Aiden adored Amelia, he'd probably volunteer to finish the prank himself. If it wasn't Aiden, it had to be Gage. Aiden's cousin had arrived 2 days before, when Amelia and I had been out on a shopping trip, picking up construction paper and tape. I met him briefly at the family dinner to celebrate his homecoming, but I hadn't seen him since. Hoping my guess was right, I said, "I'm Sophie, Amelia's nurse." A grunt in my ear, but the arms around me didn't loosen. Shoot, I knew better than to struggle. Fighting back only made them hurt you more. My breath shallow, body still. I tried again. "I'm allowed to be here. I'm not doing anything wrong. Please let me go." I felt his head drop to my shoulder, the heat of his forehead pressing into my bare neck. He drew in a deep breath. Was he smelling me? Panic sliced through me again. "No, please, no. Please don't make me have to leave this place." I'd thought I was safe here. For the first time in years, I was safe. I didn't want to have to leave. His heart jackhammered, the echo of its frantic beats fluttering against my back where his chest pressed tightly to me. "Please," I whispered. The arms around me loosened. I stayed frozen. I was too cautious to move until I'd truly been set free. This could be a trap, and I was too smart to fall for it. Anthony had trained me well. Warm lips brushed the side of my neck, another deep inhale. He was smelling me. The urge to flee was almost impossible to resist, but I knew in my gut running was the worst mistake I could make. I racked my brain for everything I knew of Gage. He was the oldest son of James and Anna Winters, Aiden's aunt and uncle. James and Anna had been brutally murdered when Gage was a child, when Aiden's parents had been killed in an identical crime 8 years later. Gage had been 18. The day after their funeral, he'd joined the army. Until today, he'd never really come home. Details of his military service were scarce, but Amelia had told me everything she knew. He'd enlisted, gone to college, then through officer training school, before he'd joined the Rangers. After that, he'd moved into special forces, his missions and teams so top secret, his family hadn't been sure he was still with the army until they'd called to tell Aiden that Gage was missing. For months, the family had been stuck in limbo, swinging between grief and hope, right up until a second call had informed Aiden that Gage had escaped captivity. He was coming home as soon as the military hospital released him, but they'd warned Aiden that the months of imprisonment had taken a toll. Gage was no longer the man his family remembered. Aiden had commented dryly that Gage had been gone so long, they barely knew him at all. No matter what the circumstances of his homecoming, to his family, Gage was a stranger. As my panic ebbed, I realized the man holding me captive might possibly be more freaked out than I was. He probably had some form of post-traumatic stress if he'd been held captive for months. Finding an intruder in his home was just the kind of thing that would set him off, especially when his home must seem like a foreign place after so many years away. Logic told me that a former Special Forces soldier suffering from PTSD was more dangerous, not less. But my guess at what might be going through his head put me back in control. As a woman alone in the dark, I was terrified. As a nurse and a woman used to dealing with volatile men, I knew what I needed to do. "Gage?" I asked, careful to keep my voice low and soothing. "Gage, it's okay. You can let go. I'm Amelia's nurse. I'm allowed to be here. It's okay." I kept talking in the same soothing voice, feeling the tension slip from his body. Eventually, he lifted his head and stepped back, setting me free. With an odd sense of triumph, I crossed the room before I turned around. I thought he was steady, but I wanted some space between us, just in case. "I'm going to turn on the lamp," I warned, just before I reached beneath the shade and turned the knob. Light flared, blinding me for a moment. A deep chuckle rumbled from across the room.
"Whose idea was it?"
he asked. His voice distracted me for a second, so deep and calm, at odds with the tension that had seized his muscles only a few minutes before. I glanced at the light and saw the shadow of an enormous spider lurking on the inside of the shade. I stepped away with a shiver before I realized what I was doing. Silly, since I was the one who had taped the bugs in place, but I hadn't expected them to look so real. Amelia was good. Clearing my throat, I said, "Amelia's. It's always Amelia's idea." I wanted to ask if he was okay, but I held my tongue. "Clever," he said. "That's Amelia," I agreed.
"Is this the only room you did?"
"It is." Judging it safe to move, I began to gather up my materials, tucking my phone back in the pocket of my robe and making sure I had all the extra bugs and the tape. A prank was no good if I left the evidence sitting around.
"Mrs. W. won't be happy."
I smiled. It was sweet the way the family doted on Mrs. W. I'd always imagined a family as wealthy and powerful as the Winterses would be stuffy, far above those they'd consider the help. Instead, they treated Mrs. W. like family and had welcomed me as an equal, insisting I join them for meals and giving me a room in the main house that was bigger than my apartment when I'd been in nursing school. "I already texted her," I reassured Gage. "She'll make a big fuss tomorrow when she turns on the lights, unless Aiden does it first."
"Aiden doesn't know?"
I shook my head, picking up the last scrap of construction paper. Suddenly, without anything to do, I crossed my arms over my chest. Gage stood in shadow, his features hard to make out. But I was uncomfortably aware I was in my robe, my hair down, looking like an unprofessional mess. In the 6 months I'd been living in Winter's house, I'd never encountered another soul awake in the middle of the night. Clearing my throat, I said, "No, Aiden likes to be surprised." Gage let out a grunt I couldn't decipher. He took a step forward, leaving the shadows of the corner. Light bathed his features, and my breath caught. I'd heard Gage and Aiden were like twins. Everyone else must be blind. To my eyes, they looked nothing alike. Sure, they both had the same build, tall, broad shoulders, lean hips, the same dark hair, Even their features were superficially similar, with sharp cheekbones, aristocratic noses, and full lower lips. Where Aiden's hair had the same auburn tones as his little sister Charlie, Gage's was a true brown, not a hint of red to be seen. I'd always thought soldiers wore their hair short, but Gage's was a little long, shaggy, as if he hadn't had it cut in months. Which, of course, he hadn't. I imagined his hairstyle hadn't been a priority when he'd been trying to escape his captors. He'd probably cut it now that he was home. Maybe with shorter hair he'd look more like Aiden. I took in the tension in his shoulders, his hands curled into fists. No. The obvious aside, Aiden looked nothing like Gage. Aiden was cool, refined, controlled. Standing in the pool of light, his faded gray t-shirt stretched around his biceps, hugging his well-defined chest, Gage was raw, his power barely leashed. Despite his stillness, he vibrated with energy. I sensed it was taking everything he had to remain where he was. His vivid blue eyes were the least of the differences between Gage and his cousin. Those eyes were leveled on me, pinning me in place as effectively as his arms had a few minutes before. Clearing my throat, I said, "Are you going to spoil it for her?"
"The prank?"
Gage asked. At my nod, he said,
"No."
"Thank you." I started for the door to the library, careful to give Gage a wide berth. I didn't think he was going to grab me again, but it seemed smarter to stay out of arm's reach.
"Tell me next time,"
he said. "What?" I stopped at the door, confused. He was silent for a long moment before answering in a halting voice.
"I don't do well with surprises these days. The next time Amelia decides to mess with us, fill me in."
Instantly, I understood. Amelia's plan to duct tape an air horn to Aiden's desk chair would be a nightmare to a man newly home from a combat zone, even if he didn't have post-traumatic stress. And I was betting Gage did. "Do you have a cell?" I asked. Gage raised his eyebrows in question. I explained. "I text Mrs. W. to warn her. I'll try to talk Amelia out of a few of her plans that might be a problem, but I can text you, too. That way you know what's coming."
"So, Amelia hasn't slowed down. Good to know some things don't change,"
he said, his voice heavy with something I couldn't quite identify. Regret? Whatever it was, Gage Winters sounded sad. I had the absurd urge to comfort him. Absurd because not only did I not know what was wrong, he was a Winters. Yes, he'd been through a terrible experience, but he was alive. He was home with his family, living in this enormous mansion, with a job waiting for him at Winters Incorporated and more money than he could count stashed away in the bank. Gage Winters didn't need my comfort. He didn't need anything from me. He might remind me of a wounded animal, but wounded animals were dangerous, and I'd been bitten enough. "The only person in this house who needs you is Amelia," I reminded myself. "Stay away from Gage Winters."
"Are you in Vance's old room?"
Gage asked. "I am. Across from Amelia. I guess her room used to be Holden and Tate's?" Gage nodded.
"If you're done with your bugs, I'll walk you back."
"It's just down the hall," I protested.
"All the same, I'll walk you back."
I didn't bother to argue. Gage followed me out the door, turning off the lamp before we left the room. The short stretch of hall outside the library was dark, the doors to the wine room and Aiden's office lost in the shadows. We turned the corner to the main hall, where silvery moonlight streamed through the tall arched windows, casting the walls in dreamlike shades. Outside, in the center courtyard of Winter's house, a fountain burbled, the water flashing black and silver. I loved this fairy tale of a house. I completely understood why Mrs. W. was so devoted to it. How could Gage have left this place and not come back for so many years? In the 6 months I'd been with Amelia, Winter's house had become a haven. Why had Gage left it just when he'd needed it most? I couldn't imagine the losses this family had suffered. Not really. I'd lost my mother to cancer when I was a teenager. But Gage had not only lost both his parents as a child, he'd lost the aunt and uncle who'd raised him when he'd barely been a man. More than once since he'd gone missing, I'd wondered what had happened to make the 18-year-old Gage flee his family home. Now that he was back, was he going to stay? None of it was my business, but I couldn't help my curiosity. Gage kept his distance as we walked down the hall, following just slightly behind me. Our feet shuffled along the polished hardwood floors, almost silent in the sleeping house. This wasn't the first time I'd wandered Winter's house in the middle of the night, but it was the first time I'd done so with company. We reached the door to my bedroom across the hall from Amelia's. I reached for the handle and Gage's fingers closed over mine. I started in surprise, letting out a little squeak. I was grateful for the dark as I felt my cheeks turn red.
"I'm sorry about earlier,"
Gage said in his low rumble.
"I wasn't expecting to see anyone in the library, and I reacted on instinct. I didn't mean to scare you."
"You didn't," I lied. "It's okay." Gage dropped his hand and stared at me, his blue eyes gleaming in the moonlight, seeing everything. He knew I was lying, knew I'd been scared. Lips pressed together and eyes wide, I silently begged him to let it go. Gage took a step back and dropped his hand.
"Sleep well, Sophie,"
he said, his low voice sending shivers down my spine. "You too," I whispered, and escaped into my room.
Chapter 2 Gage. Aiden was avoiding me. It took me a while to figure it out. He worked so much, sometimes it seemed like he was avoiding everyone. I'd been home for 2 days, and we hadn't spent more than 20 minutes alone together since I'd walked through the door. Don't get me wrong. Aiden was glad I was home. Everyone was. And I was relieved as hell to be here. There'd been times, too many of them, when I'd been certain I'd never see home again. Somehow I'd imagined things would go differently if I ever got here. Always the dutiful head of the family, Aiden had met my plane. I'd seen him here and there over the past 13 years, but I hadn't really noticed him growing older until I'd come home for good. Fuck. We'd both gotten old. We were the same age, pretty much. We even looked alike. And now we had the same grooves drawn into our faces, the same lines around our eyes. Once we'd been inseparable. Now, Aiden could barely meet my eyes. He was pissed at me. Still. Or maybe again. For what, I wasn't sure, and Aiden wasn't talking. There was a long list of possibilities. I'd run out on all of them after Olivia and Hugh had died. None of them really knew why. I'd been 18, lost in grief and guilt and fear, and I'd abandoned my family. I had to live with that. But the last 6 months seemed like enough penance to me. I didn't know if Aiden was mad that I'd left, or mad that I'd come home, or pissed that I'd spent the last 13 years throwing myself into danger when I didn't have to. Shit. If I really wanted to make a list of all the reasons Aiden had to be mad at me, it would take all day. Unfortunately for him, I was back, and he was going to have to deal with me. So far, he'd proven adept at dodging me, leaving the house early and working late. The night he'd been home for dinner, we had been surrounded by the rest of the family, and Aiden had been careful to preserve his distance. So far, I'd let it go. Now, I was done. Aiden stepped out of the dining room, a folded newspaper in his hand, and stopped short when I blocked his path. "Gage, you're up early," he said, in a polite, distant tone. Mrs. W. is still serving breakfast if you're hungry. He moved to walk around me. When I stepped to block him, his eyes narrowed briefly before he raised one eyebrow and gave me the look he used when he wanted to send people scurrying in the other direction. It didn't work on me. I was a soldier. And I'd shared a room with him when he still wet the bed. It took a lot more than Aiden's glare to send me running. "I'll eat in a minute," I said. "I want to talk to you about the company." Aiden checked his watch in a show of impatience and said, "Can we do this later? I have an early meeting." "You can spare 2 minutes," I said. "I want to come to work. I'm not expecting any favors. We can talk about the skills I have and how we can use them, but I have a stake in Winters, Inc., and I'm tired of sitting around doing nothing." An undefinable emotion ghosted over Aiden's familiar features. Regret or grief tinged with anger. I had been right. He was pissed. Checking his watch again, he said, "Gage, you just got home. You need to take it easy. Relax. Settle in. I'm happy to have you at the company, but why don't we table this until after the holidays? The next few weeks are going to be busy between Charlie's wedding and then Tate's. You've been gone 13 years. You can wait another few weeks." "Aiden," I tried again. "We need to talk." "Later, Gage." Aiden skirted around me and was gone, heading past the kitchen to the garage. Temporarily defeated, I entered the dining room to find it empty. It was still early, just after 7. Aunt Amelia and Sophie were probably still asleep. Considering that Sophie had been up half the night, I hoped she was still asleep. I wasn't ready to face her in daylight. The door leading from the butler's pantry into the dining room swung open, and Mrs. Williamson's familiar face appeared.
"Scrambled eggs with cheese, sausages, and black coffee?" she asked, with a wink.
"That would be great. Thanks, Mrs. W." I sat at the table, smiling to myself. I hadn't expected my homecoming to be easy. I'd spent too much time away for that. But Mrs. W. was just as I'd remembered her. She alone seemed to bear no resentment over my absence. She'd welcomed me with a firm hug and a kiss on one cheek, only saying, "I missed you, and I'm so glad you're home." We'd both pretended to ignore the shine of tears in her eyes, and mine. Even Aunt Amelia had given me shit after she enfolded me in a fierce hug. She hadn't been able to stop herself from scolding me for getting captured in the first place. Like that was the plan. At least I'd gotten my team out of harm's way before I'd gone down. But did I get any credit for that? Not from my family. I knew they'd been scared. After so much loss and death, learning that I was missing must have been awful. I got it. I did. But I was home. I was even in one piece, which was a miracle, all things considered. Mrs. W. came in, setting a steaming cup of black coffee in front of me, along with a woven silver basket covered with an embroidered napkin, the crimson W. standing out against the snowy linen. Steam wafted up, smelling of biscuits and butter. I'd missed a lot of things about home, but the food had to be at the top of the list. Mrs. W. squeezed my shoulder and left. From her, that was the equivalent of a long embrace. Mrs. W. had firm ideas about her place in the family, mostly that she wasn't family. The rest of us disagreed, but we'd long since learned not to bother arguing with Mrs. W. Now that our parents were dead, Helen Williamson was the closest thing we had to a mother, and every one of us loved her like one. I thought of the bugs taped on the insides of the lampshades in the library and mentally corrected myself. Almost all of us loved her like family. Aunt Amelia, not so much. I'd never really understood why those two didn't get along. Since Mrs. W. would rather die than admit she disliked a member of the Winters family, she refused to talk. When I'd asked Amelia, she'd only narrowed her sharp eyes and shook her head, saying, "I have my reasons." I didn't envy Sophie the job of keeping the peace between those two. Sophie. I wasn't sure if I was dreading or anticipating seeing her again. Both. It was both. Dreading because I owed her an apology. I still couldn't believe I'd grabbed her in the dark like that. I'd terrified her. It killed me to know I'd scared any woman, but especially this one. And anticipating. Fuck. Once I'd gotten a good look at her, how could I not anticipate seeing Sophie again? When I'd first walked into the library, all I'd seen was a shadow moving in the dark in a room that should be empty. In that room. The library carried too many memories. More than memories. Nightmares of the last time I'd walked into a scene that didn't belong. My head wasn't screwed on right these days. I'd come back in one piece physically, but mentally, let's just say I was doing better than expected, but I wasn't quite back to normal. Not yet. Maybe I never would be. Bad dreams, insomnia, jumping at loud noises. I'd been around long enough to know what post-traumatic stress looked like. I'd seen it in other guys, even talked to them about it, encouraged them to get some help. So easy when it wasn't me. I laid in bed at night and closed my eyes. All I could see were things I wanted to forget. The fucking flashbacks were the worst. I knew they weren't real. In my mind, I knew I wasn't back there, locked in a cage. My body disagreed. When they hit, I broke out in a sweat. My heart raced, and every part of me was convinced I was in mortal danger. I knew what was wrong with me, but I wasn't in control. If I had been, I never would have grabbed Sophie like that. At first, my arms had closed around her, and I'd been ready to throw her to the floor to restrain her as if she'd been the intruder I thought she was. Then, I'd smelled her. Such a simple thing, scent. It sneaks into your brain, provoking a response before you can process. My instincts told my body to relax before my brain got in gear. Nothing that smelled like Sophie could be a threat. I kept trying to figure it out, but I couldn't break it down. Her scent was a contradiction. Sweet and sultry, like flowers and spice. Innocence. Seductive, sensual innocence. I'd grabbed her because I thought her an intruder, but I held on because I wanted more. Her body was soft, rounded and warm against me. It wasn't until I realized how fast her heart was beating, how short her breath was, that I let go. Fuck. I owed her an apology. I'd wanted to comfort her, but I was aware enough to realize that as the person who'd scared the crap out of her, my comfort wouldn't be welcome. And if she realized I was half hard after holding that soft body against me, it would have made everything worse. I could have stayed in the library with her all night. Just her scent and her low, soothing voice had been enough. But when she turned on the light, the sight of her was a punch to the gut. Sophie was a tiny thing, at least compared to me. There was no way she was much more than 5'3". In her tightly belted white robe, silvery blonde hair spilling over her shoulders, she'd looked like an angel. Except no angel should have a body like that. The robe hid everything, but I'd held her against me. The feel of her ass would keep me up at night, not that I'd complain. Remembering her soft curves was a much better reason for insomnia than flashbacks and nightmares. I wanted to see her again. Hopefully she wasn't one more person in this house who was pissed at me. Reminding me that not everyone was mad, Mrs. W. returned with a plate filled with cheese, eggs, and sausage. If I kept eating like this, I'd have to get back into the gym. I planned to do that anyway. Physically, I was ready. I wasn't made for idleness. Aiden was nuts if he thought I was just going to sit around for the next 3 weeks. I'd find a way to get what I wanted one way or another. I ate my breakfast, savoring every bite, and headed down to the lower level of Winter's house. Smaller than the main level of the house, the lower level had only 3 rooms, but all of them were huge. I passed the cavernous space Mrs. W. used for kitchen storage. I didn't often think about opening that door. No one went in that room without Mrs. W.'s express permission. I had no idea what she kept in there, but I suspected it was some combination of extra food and the many linens and place settings she used in the dining room. Whatever. I didn't want to know. A little further down the hall was the gym. It probably wasn't getting much use these days. I swung open the door to see that Aiden had upgraded since I'd last been home, adding a brand new rowing machine and a new treadmill. The free weights and Nautilus looked the same. Someone had set up an area with yoga mats, probably Charlie when she still lived here. Grateful for the distraction and something productive to do with my day, I headed for the treadmill. I'd get in some miles while I planned the rest of my workout. 6 months of captivity, followed by weeks in the military hospital, had left me ridiculously out of shape. I was headed to a desk job at Winters Inc., but that didn't mean I was going soft. I ran for an hour before I hit the free weights. By the time I was done, my muscles were wrung out, fatigue pulling at me. I couldn't remember the last time I'd slept well, and the night before was no exception. After walking Sophie to her bed, I'd gone to my own. I'd fallen asleep right away, for once. But, woken an hour later, my heart thudding in my chest, covered in a cold sweat, my hands shaking from a nightmare I couldn't remember. Fucking flashbacks. I had a theory that if I exhausted my body, my mind would shut down and let me sleep. Putting it to the test, I jogged up 2 flights of stairs to my bedroom suite, took a quick shower, and climbed into bed. Closing my eyes, I willed myself to fall asleep. I might have slept. Mostly, I drifted in a light doze, the sounds of the house creeping through the heavy wooden door of my suite. A vacuum running, female voices. A scream that shot adrenaline through my veins before I remembered the construction paper insects and the lampshades in the library. I almost gave up on sleep after that. But I hadn't gotten more than a few hours a night for months. If I couldn't get past this, I'd never get my shit together. I closed my eyes, breathing in deep, slow inhalations. Gradually, my nervous system went off high alert and my muscles relaxed. I rolled over and doubled up my pillow, trying to get comfortable. My surroundings were unfamiliar. The house I'd grown up in, strange, alien. As a teenager, I'd shared these rooms with Aiden, his parents in the suite that was now his. Sometime after they'd died and I'd left home, Aiden had moved into their rooms. I didn't care about that. Aiden was the oldest, just as his father had been. Those rooms were his by right. I didn't want them. It probably seemed logical to redecorate our old room after he moved out. I was gone, and we weren't kids anymore. Our double beds had disappeared along with the identical dressers covered with trophies and cork boards pinned with concert tickets and snapshots taken with friends. Everything of our shared childhood had been stripped from the room and packed away. Now, the suite was elegantly decorated with a bedroom set in dark wood, one I might have chosen for myself if I hadn't preferred that everything stay the same. The sitting room, where we'd hung out and studied, had a new flat-screen TV and a comfortable couch. As teenagers, we'd begged for a TV in our room more times than I can remember. Now that I had one, bigger than anything I'd dreamed of at 17, I just wanted it gone. That TV was one more reminder of how much things had changed. how everyone but me had moved on. I'd left home to escape my memories, but they haunted me all the same. It felt like I lay in that bed for hours, half asleep, lingering just on the edge of dreams. I finally got up and stretched out on the couch to watch a movie. I must have slept for a while because I woke to find the sun setting. Instead of refreshed, I was slow, groggy. The house was empty when I left my suite. At the sound of my feet on the stairs, Mrs. W. came out of the kitchen to tell me that Aiden had a dinner meeting and Aunt Amelia was at her bridge club with Sophie. I ate alone. I could tell Mrs. W. felt badly about it, and I didn't know how to tell her I was relieved. I loved my family. Maybe it didn't seem like it after I'd left home and rarely come back, but I did. It's just that there are a lot of them. After 6 months in a cell, I wasn't ready for crowds. In the airport on my way home, the press of people had left me feeling as if my skin wanted to crawl off my bones. I wanted to be with my family. That's why I came home. But the collected mass of my relatives and their significant others was a crowd, loud and rambunctious. I craved them. And wanted to flee at the same time. After a solitary dinner, I went back to my suite and sat at the desk to make a list. I needed to get in gear to get my life back. At 18, I'd walked away from my future, from the life I'd planned for myself, and if Aiden's attitude was any indication, no one was going to hand it back to me. That was fair. But if Aiden thought I was going to sit back and let him push me out of my own company, he'd learn he was mistaken. I could give him time. I owed him that. But I wasn't going to sit around and wait for him to get over himself. I needed the basics, a new phone, a laptop, a wardrobe that consisted of more than athletic shorts and cargo pants. I wasn't flying to London for my suits like Aiden. The thought of sitting through a crowded flight twisted my gut in a knot, and I wasn't asking Aiden for access to the company plane. Not yet. I talked to Vance. My little brother wasn't so little anymore, and he had good taste. He also wore clothes aside from suits, had little patience for shopping, and was speaking to me. All things I couldn't say about Aiden. I made a note to call him in the morning. The phone and laptop were easy enough. A quick trip to a big box electronics store and I'd be in business. I added a tablet to my list. Mine had broken shortly before the mission that had derailed my career and my life, and I hadn't had a chance to replace it. Setting down my pen, I stood from the desk and stretched. Once I had the laptop, I could get to work. I had a lot of catching up to do on Winters, Inc., and I could start with everything available in the public record. I shoved my hands in my pockets and paced the sitting room of my suite. I needed something to do. Even after my nap, I should be tired. I had months of broken sleep to make up for. I was tired. There was a part of me that was so deeply exhausted I doubted I'd ever sleep enough to fill the well. Still, after months of insomnia, I knew I wasn't close to tired enough to sleep. Another workout wasn't the answer. I thought about a movie, but rejected that idea. Maybe later. What I really wanted was a book. The library was deserted, a single lamp lit in the corner of the room. I went straight to the built-in shelves on the right side of the fireplace, to the bottom where Uncle Hugh always kept his mysteries. Aunt Olivia made him hide them below eye level, the brightly colored spines clashing with the more formal leather-bound volumes that made up the bulk of the collection. I'd read most of Hugh's books when I'd been a teenager. I'd always gotten along well with my Uncle Hugh, even before my own father had been killed. Our shared love of mysteries was just one of the things that bound us together. It burned that his death was still unsolved, not unlike the central plot to one of the books we'd loved. He deserved better. I forced my thoughts off that path. If I started thinking about what Hugh and Olivia deserved, it would be a short jump to remembering what I should have done. How I might have saved them if I hadn't been an immature, selfish asshole the night they died. If I was going to dwell on the past, I might as well pick up the decanter of whiskey in the corner and drain it dry. I owed my family better than that. I'd run from my problems once. I'd run and stayed away. 13 years was long enough. I was home, and I was sticking. Alcohol was just another way of running. I was done with running. Gritting my teeth against the desire to pour just one glass, I grabbed a book at random and settled into the couch. A click of the remote on the end table and the fireplace came to life, bathing the room in a soft, warm glow. I'd read the book before, in high school, but I didn't mind. Stretched out on the library couch with one of Uncle Hugh's favorite books in my hands, I felt at home for the first time in years. At home, but not relaxed. A shuffle of bare feet in the hall reached my ears, and every muscle in my body drew tight, prepared to act, only moments before a shadow fell in the doorway to the library.
Chapter 3. Sophie. I couldn't sleep. I was used to it. Years had passed since I'd had a decent night's rest. Before my marriage, I'd been a champion sleeper, able to ignore the bright light of morning streaming into my bedroom and sleep until noon, then take a nap a few hours later. I used to love to sleep. Marriage to Anthony cured me of that indulgent habit. I didn't usually have trouble falling asleep. It was staying asleep that caused me problems. Like clockwork, I'd jerk awake in the middle of the night, my heart pounding, my mind caught in a nightmare. I'd sit in bed, gasping for breath, the memory of hard hands on my legs, dragging me from sleep, alive in my mind. "Anthony is gone," I'd remind myself. "You're safe now. Everything is okay." I knew that was true. I was safe. Anthony was dead. In the 6 months that I'd been living at Winter's house, those words were even more true. The Winters family had a high-tech security system. No one was getting into this house uninvited. I had nothing to fear here. I knew that. Well, the logical part of my brain knew it. The animal part of me, the part that knew what terror was, that part was afraid to trust in safety. Once, I'd thought I was safe. I'd thought I was marrying the prince from a fairy tale, and had ended up in a nightmare. 2 years had passed, and I still woke almost every night shaking in remembered terror. To be honest, I was sick of it. I was ready to move on. I was done with being damaged, Sophie. Scared, Sophie. Most of all, I was finished with victim, Sophie. I'd made a mistake, trusted the wrong man. How many other women could say the same? A ton. Anthony was dead, and I'd moved on. I had. I just needed my subconscious to move on with me. For now, I strode down the halls of Winter's house, my path lit by the moonlight streaming through the tall windows, considering whether I wanted to try the new tea Amelia had recommended for insomnia. I adored Amelia, but that tea smelled like something better left in the bottom of the trash can. Insomnia might be a better option if it tasted anything like it smelled. Flickering light caught my eye, for a second sending a bolt of fear through my chest. Fire. Winter's house was on fire. Then I realized the smoke alarms would have gone off if it had been a real fire. At the very least, I would have smelled smoke. This was nothing more than someone forgetting to turn off the gas fireplace in the library before heading to bed. I took a detour, intending to turn off the gas and the lights on my way to the kitchen, and stopped short. Gage Winters was stretched out on the leather sofa reading a book, the light of the fire flickering over his cheekbones. My heart kicked into a thumping beat at the sight of him. Unlike our first meeting, this time he was relaxed, or as relaxed as I imagined Gage Winters ever was, even at ease, lounging in front of the fire with a book. He gave off the same sense of barely leashed energy he had the night before. This was not a man who knew what it meant to chill out. His blue eyes pinned me in place, scanning me in a slow pass from the top of my head to my bare feet, heating as they moved. His full lower lip curved into a smile.
"Do you have more paper bugs?"
he asked in that deep, smooth voice. I shook my head. No.
"Another prank Amelia dreamed up? I heard the screams this afternoon. She must have been happy."
I cleared my throat. She was. Mrs. W. has a very convincing scream. And she pretended to scold Amelia, which I think she secretly enjoyed. Gage chuckled, the sound floating across the room, drawing out my own small laugh.
"If you're not setting up another of Amelia's pranks, what are you doing awake in the middle of the night?"
I was suddenly conscious of how I must look, wrapped in my oversized robe, my hair in a loose braid down my back. I dressed casually at Winter's house. The family didn't want me to wear a uniform, but a robe and bare feet were inappropriate. It hadn't occurred to me that I'd run into anyone, despite my encounter with Gage the night before. Tightening the belt on my robe, I smoothed stray wisps of hair back from my face and said, "I'm sorry to interrupt you. I thought someone left the fireplace on. I was just going to make some tea. I'll get out of your way." Cheeks pink with embarrassment, I was ready to flee to the kitchen when Gage said,
"Can't sleep?"
I turned back, shaking my head. I wake up in the middle of the night a lot, and have trouble falling back to sleep. My curiosity took hold of my tongue, and I asked, "Is that why you're awake in the middle of the night again? Trouble sleeping?" Gage took a second to answer, a second during which I lectured myself on asking him personal questions. I wasn't his friend. I worked here, and asking a virtual stranger personal questions was rude. I took a step back toward the door, expecting him to dismiss me. He didn't need to explain why he was up reading in the middle of the night. It was his house. I was an employee. When he spoke, Gage's voice was so quiet I had to strain to hear. The words a vibration in the air, I felt more than heard.
"I haven't been sleeping much lately,"
he trailed off. "Trouble falling asleep or staying asleep?" I asked.
"Both,"
he admitted.
"I have nightmares."
My training kicked in, and without thinking I said, "That's normal, considering what you've been through. Did they talk to you before you left the military hospital? Tell you what to expect?" Gage's face shut down, his eyes flicking away and his mouth going hard, that lush lower lip compressing into the top in a thin line. Shit, none of my business. I took another step back and shook my head in apology. "I'm sorry. Sometimes I forget everyone isn't a patient. I'll let you get back to your book."
"Wait,"
Gage said, his voice carrying a demand I knew better than to ignore. Men like Gage Winters were used to being obeyed. I'd had enough of obeying men to last me a lifetime. But I worked for his family, and I liked my job. More than that, I realized I wanted to hear what he was going to say next. I fought the urge to give myself another lecture, and stopped, turning back to face him again. The hard line of his mouth had softened, but those blue eyes were still sharp and on guard.
"The tea. Does it help?"
he asked. "I don't really know," I said. At his raised eyebrow, I explained. "The tea I usually drink when I can't sleep helps a little, but this is a new one. Amelia ordered it for me off the internet. I have no idea if it's any good, but I promised her I'd try. Do you want me to make you a cup?" I expected him to refuse. I have no idea why I even offered. I was usually good at watching my words, but with Gage, my tongue outran my brain. Something about him made me speak without thinking. I tried not to remember that speaking without thinking could be dangerous. I was safe here. If Gage ended up being a problem, nothing was stopping me from leaving.
"I'd love a cup of tea,"
Gage said, something warm drifting through his eyes.
"Do you need any help?"
"No," I said, the sound almost a yelp, before fleeing to the familiar comfort of the kitchen. They say a watched pot never boils, but the electric kettle in Winter's house didn't get that memo, because it was happily boiling away long before I was ready to face Gage again. I should get an electric kettle for my room, I thought. Then I wouldn't have to come to the kitchen at night, and wouldn't risk running into Gage in my robe again. I could do that. It would be convenient, but I'd miss my nightly trips through Winter's house. There was something about traversing the sleeping house in the dark, alone, the way the moonlight turned the house into a fairy tale, that made me feel as if I'd stumbled into my own happy ending. I loved this house. Loved to be alone in it. Though I wasn't alone now. I poured steaming water over the tea bags in matching mugs, wincing at the odor as the hot water hit the tea. Yuck. I couldn't imagine something that smelled this bad could possibly help me sleep. The stench alone would keep me awake. I'd promised Amelia I'd try the tea, so I dutifully carried the two mugs down the hall to the library, thinking wistfully of a nice mug of honeyed chamomile instead. Gage was sitting up on one side of the sofa when I returned, leaving the other side open for me. I wasn't sure about sharing the sofa with him, but it was wide enough to give me space, and sitting in one of the armchairs by the fire would have been weird when he'd moved to leave me a seat. I felt awkward enough with Gage. I didn't need to make a point by sitting across the room and making it even worse. I handed him one of the mugs, warning, "It's hot." Holding my breath, I raised my own mug to my lips, blew across the top, and took a hesitant sip. I have no words to describe the taste that hit my tongue. Acrid and yet organic. Organic the way a rotten stump is organic. This tea was not about fresh fruit and flowers. It tasted like old gym socks and wet leaves from beneath a dead animal. Gage took a sip and choked. Wiping my hand across the back of my mouth, I watched as he gritted his teeth and forced himself to swallow. It was a good thing he hadn't spit it out. I wasn't sure Mrs. W. would be able to get the stench out of the carpet. It would have been a shame to abandon the library because it smelled like this tea. "What the fuck is in this stuff?" Gage asked, his eyes narrowed on his mug as if he was plotting the best way to destroy it. "I have no idea. But it's horrible," I said. Saliva pooled in my mouth and I swallowed. I needed something to get rid of this taste.
"Are you sure she's not pranking you?"
I thought about it. It was possible. "No, I don't think so. I control Amelia's access to cookies. I don't think she'd risk cookies to tease me."
"You control her access to cookies?"
"She's diabetic. It's not severe, but she has to limit sugar. Amelia is serious about her sweets. And sneaky. I search her room every day for contraband. I don't think she'd risk dessert just to see me squirm, especially since she missed the show."
"Good point." Gage stood. "I'm going to pour this out. Want to come find something to wash the taste away?"
"Yes, please." I followed Gage down the hall to the kitchen, holding my breath so I didn't inhale the steam wafting off the tea. Whatever was in this, it was the foulest brew I'd ever smelled. I tipped my mug over the sink with relief, turning on the faucet to wash the tea away. Gage picked up the box on the counter and turned it over, looking for the ingredient list.
"It's all in Hanzi,"
he murmured.
Then louder, "It's in Chinese. I can read some Chinese, but I don't know any of these characters."
"Herbal medicine wasn't included in your Chinese lessons?" I asked, rummaging through the cabinets for something to clear our palates. There was no way I'd sleep tonight if I couldn't get the taste of this tea out of my mouth.
"Not exactly,"
Gage said with a wry smile.
I don't need to know what they put in this tea. All that matters is it tastes disgusting.
Gage handed me his cup to pour out in the sink and crossed the room to rummage.